Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with our pal Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated. That's an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. If you've listened to the show before, you know Gordon's CV is exemplary. It all began back in 1979 in Wolfsburg, Germany, at the Factory Mechanics Training School. And it was off to the races from there. Gordon knows stuff about cars that we can only dream of knowing. And the lines are already starting to get full. I think we have one open line right now. If you call in and you get a busy signal, best thing to do is just wait until somebody hangs up and call again. The number is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also do the Facebook thing, WAMC Radio. There'll be a Vox Pop post there. You can tweet us if you wish at WAMC Radio. Just use the hashtag VoxPop, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. But once again, the number is 1-800-348-2551. Oh, what a great day for a ride, Gordon Fricke.
Fantastic.
What'd you drive up in today?
Nothing out of the ordinary. Just a Chevy Malibu.
All right, you need to get the Riviera out again.
I've got to put a lot of it back together.
What do you mean?
Well, we painted it over the winter.
What'd you paint? Like sparkly purple or something?
No, original color.
Ah, good for you.
Arctic white. General Motors Arctic white.
Yeah.
But, of course, all the chrome is off, the bumpers. I have to do some interior. I got a lot of stuff ahead of me.
So you're hoping to get that on the road this summer, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. It's nice when you don't have to pay the mechanic an hourly on that.
Yes, I just get to beat my knuckles to death.
Right? Well, you know, that's why you're in the game.
Yeah.
All right, phone lines are loaded. Let's go to Dan in Canaan. Dan, you're up.
Hi there. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How about yourself?
Good.
Good. Appreciate talking with you, and I've got a great question for you. I've got a 2004 GMC Savannah, the all-wheel drive model, and I'll be driving down the road, and I'll notice my temperature gauge is down maybe at 100 degrees. I'm getting plenty of heat, though. During the winter, it's still blasting out heat. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, the van will cut out as if I turn the key off for a second, and then the temperature gauge pops back up to 180. It doesn't seem to be fluctuating in temperature, although somehow some kind of, I don't know, electrical issue maybe is tied into that gauge in the van. About 6 months ago, I had the ground cable from the body to the frame rod off, and before it went, the whole cluster would go out for a moment or two, and then they'd come back on. This time, it's just that temperature gauge is going up and down in sync with the van cutting out for just a fraction of a second.
Okay. Have you ever heard of this before?
Yeah. That frame ground, that was a good. I don't know if it was found, caught, or if it just rotted off and somebody, you know, finally found it. But that can raise a lot of trouble. It can also prevent the vehicle from running. Was that ground back towards the driver's end of the frame, back of the vehicle?
I definitely think it's on the driver's side.
Yeah.
I can't tell you why I think that, but I was probably walking in and out of the bay while they were working
on
it.
There's more than one ground there, but one of the big ones will control the fuel pump, among other things. And we've been there before on that exact van. What could be happening regarding the temperature gauge and the momentary cut out of the engine, I still would not rule out other grounds because, you know, it's a corrosion issue we run into a lot in Northeast. There's also the possibility that the temperature sensor on the engine that feeds the signal to the computer, and in some cases that same signal goes to the instrument cluster for temperature reading, is going bad. And if that sensor is completely failing, it will give the computer completely wrong information about the engine's temp, and it may peg it so fast that it thinks that it just overheated or that it's 40 below zero. And that's what could be the issue there, particularly if your heater hasn't gone down with the temperature reading. So I think I would be very careful to have all the grounds rechecked, and also the ones that go to the body. But I would get it scanned and have them watch the coolant temp readings and see what they're doing, see if they're going haywire.
All right. Dan, thank you.
Hey, Appreciate that. Have a great day, you guys.
Yeah, you too. Isn't this another, and I know I'm a dinosaur, and I've said this before on show after show, isn't this another case where computerization is destroying motoring?
That is a good subject for debate, because there are so many things that the electronic age and computers have radically improved. Emissions, drivability, startability, horsepower, major improvements. As far as hair pulling and solving problems, yes, that's the other end of the spectrum.
And while we're at it, fuel injectors. I want to be able to pour gas into my carburetor on a cold day and start it up.
You've got to turn the clock back to the 60s.
Yes,
we just spoke about that.
I think this is the problem with me. All right, let's go to Landon in Milford, Pennsylvania. Landon.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Real quick, to go back on that grounding issue, I live in the Northeast, obviously, as well, and what I did is I replaced all those steel belted woven cables because they're exposed. So I went to the Lawn and Garden Center up at, you know, a local store and got those thicker ones that are sealed, like the ones for battery terminals. I replaced all the ones in my car, and it's helped a lot.
Yeah, very good idea.
Yeah, that's one idea. But anyway, my question is, okay, I just, it's driving me nuts. I pulled the transmission on my 2008 Subaru Outback all-wheel drive legacy base model 3 times in the last 50,000 miles. I'm getting really tired of it. This is the third clutch I'm on, and it kind of in first gear, if I'm going slightly up the hill, it kind of chirps as if I've got hot spots on my flywheel, but I don't. Is there an alignment issue possibly going on? If I'm going slightly up the hill, it chirps. It's like the whole car just starts to, as if it's skipping on the flywheel, you know what I mean?
Now, are you talking about it's making that chirping sound when you're engaging the clutch to get the car going?
No, not the bearing. No, it's the connection between the flywheel and the clutch. It's the clutch plate itself, I believe. It's kind of like a bucking feeling. The car kind of bucks violently.
Sure, but in what are you already, is the clutch completely released and you're moving, or are you in the process of engaging the clutch?
Process of engaging, disengaging.
Okay.
So it's fully engaged. There's a drive. There's a connection when I've let go of the clutch. But when I'm getting into it, as opposed to it, a nice transition, it's a fuck. And someone told me there's hot spots on your flywheel, but I just had it reground before I put it back in. No, I didn't buy a new one, but I had it reground and leveled. So
yeah.
What do you think?
Well, there is a limit to how much you can machine the flywheel, and it used to be a very common practice. Nowadays, the flywheels don't lend themselves to machining, particularly if they're dual mass, which your car, I don't believe, is. If the flywheel really got overheated badly previously, sometimes machining it won't completely solve the problem, and the problem comes right back, and you get the warpage and you get the hot spots. Subaru used to, and I don't know if they do on your car, they would offer a clutch kit with a brand new flywheel in it, and it wasn't terribly expensive, but other things that are important when you're doing a clutch is to make sure that there's a sleeve that the throwout bearing slides on. That needs to be perfectly clean and very mildly lubricated, go ahead.
No, I know. I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean to cut you off. I ended up getting an oversized snout kit, and it was a TSK1 product. It's from place out. Anyway, they sell them. Subaru, they put their name on it.
Yeah.
But it basically goes over the snout because it's made of aluminum.
Yeah.
So this steel kit replaced with an oversized bearing. I put a little sticker on my car just in case I ever sell it for the next guy I know.
Yep.
That's pretty good. That's in pretty good shape, too. I mean, that's.
The other thing you spoke about is an alignment issue. And I know when we do Subarus, sometimes we have an awful time getting the transmission separated from the engine. Those dowel pins are very, very tight. And if there's any corrosion or junk that got in the hole, and you should notice this when you're tightening, but let's say you got corrosion and the bolts are all tight, but the transmission and the engine are not completely perfectly in line with each other, you're going to have a crooked clutch issue. So you really should check the gap all the way around the bell housing to the engine.
That's something I could probably easily, without taking the whole thing apart, I could probably pull it slightly apart, kind of shove like maybe a little pipe cleaner in there or something. I don't know, but
Or get a mirror.
I've done it 3 times. It's a mirror, there you go. This is just as you know, pulling a transmission is not easy.
Oh, it's not even fun the first time.
No, and I did it 3 times in 1 month.
No, yikes. No wonder you call every month, Landon. Nice to have you back on the show. Thanks, man.
All right, guys.
I appreciate
Take care.
It. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. And, well, let's see. Zach, what do you think? Take a break now? All right, we'll take a break now, and we'll come back, and then we'll have more questions and more answers, hopefully.
Support comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And H. House & Son True Value, Woodstock, New York. Since 1932, a local store featuring hardware, Benjamin Moore paint, and tool and equipment rentals. True Value. Behind every project is a true value. HHouse.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Lines are loaded right now, but as soon as Cindy hangs up, then you can give it a shot. Cindy in Plattekill, you're up. Oh, you got to turn your radio down just a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Great.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Great. Thank you for taking my call. I drive a 1999 Chevy Suburban. Oh, did I lose
you? Oh, no, we're listening intently.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I've only had it since August, and I don't know that much about it. It's my first automatic, and it going down the road, it doesn't matter what speed, it doesn't matter whether it's a smooth road or a rough road, every now and again, and unfortunately it's intermittent, there is this sound, a metal-type sound, on the driver's side, sounds like it's coming somewhere from the tire or the axle or whatever. I think related to that is on the dash, it has these buttons for two-wheel high, auto four-wheel drive high, four high, and four low. When you push those buttons, that same sound is amplified by a thousand. And I didn't know what it is.
Well, it's very possible that it's related to the front drive of your four-wheel or all-wheel drive system. And the way that works is yours has the option to go four-wheel auto, I think you said, correct?
Yes.
The four-wheel auto mode is watching for any wheel slip. And if it senses that your back wheels are spinning in the snow or sand or whatever, it will very quickly engage your front axle and start powering all the wheels.
And
it's entirely possible that that system is having some little episodes where it thinks it needs to engage the axle unnecessarily. Are you noticing any warning lights on, anti-lock brake or brake warning lights?
Yeah. Anti-lock brake is on.
Yeah, that the anti-lock brake is tied into that whole system because each of your wheels has a wheel speed sensor. So the computer knows what speed all your wheels are turning. And if one is going way faster than the other, it knows you're spinning. On the other end of that, if you are on the brakes and one of your wheels goes to zero or much slower than the others, it senses that you're locking up a wheel and it corrects that. So your problem lies in that system. And my guess would be a wheel speed sensor in the front, which is incorporated in the wheel bearing assembly. And if I don't think you have a mode where you can you just go two wheel instead of four wheel auto?
I think I'm always in two wheel. There's a two wheel high button.
Yeah, go in two wheel high.
Yeah.
See if anything changes, if it doesn't reoccur.
Ah.
But I think you're okay. I think the truck's on the brink of a wheel bearing hub assembly slash sensor going, and it could be in the driver's front if that's where you think you're feeling those sounds.
Yeah.
But it should be diagnosed with some equipment. But that's what we see happening to those.
Okay.
Okay. Is that very expensive?
It can be. That hub assembly could set you back anywhere from, let's say, $300 to $500 total job, depending on the quality of the parts and how hard it is to take it off and all
right.
that.
Right. Does it make it dangerous if I don't fix it?
Potentially, because it does okay. affect your braking when the ABS starts going haywire. So
okay.
I wouldn't put it off too long if the symptoms keep happening.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Cindy. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Chuck in Albany. Chuck.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have something here that happens intermittently, and I'm just a little bit curious about it. I have an 89 Toyota Camry with about 140,000 on it. And this will happen at lower speeds in town, you know, when I'll accelerate up to 30, 35, maybe 40 or something like that. And if I back off and then accelerate again, it'll sometimes, not always, but sometimes it'll just hesitate a little, stutter just a little bit. I mean, it's never, you know, acted like it wanted to quit or anything, but I'm just kind of curious about what that might be.
Tell me the year again of that, Chuck.
89.
89. Okay, it's too old to have onboard diagnostics, too. So your check engine light's not going to be on unless there's something drastically wrong.
No, I've already checked it with the OBD1.
Yeah, and that doesn't give you much information. That's a pretty antique system. That on the system that your car has, you're on your own in terms of diagnosing it, because unless it's a hard problem that turns the light on, once the problem's gone, there's no memory. Usually, normal things should be checked. Condition of the spark plugs, filters, gasoline.
Yeah, it's had a new filter and pump not very long ago.
Yeah. It's always a good idea to give a vehicle a fuel treatment that's going to soak up any ethanol issues. Maybe put a fuel injection cleaner in it with Tecron in it. But it could be a lot of different possibilities. You always want to start with the basics, though, and rule out some simple stuff.
I have run a couple of cans of stuff through. I mean, like I say, it doesn't really bother me too much. I've just noticed that it'll do it sometime.
Yeah, yeah. I think if it does, if it's that infrequent, I don't think I'd be that worried about it, really.
Okay.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. That Tecron stuff. You got me on that, and I swear by it now.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It's the real deal. It's not a snake oil.
No.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go to, is it Melina in Chicopee?
Melina. It's close. I'm cursed with a bad pronouncing name.
It's a nice name. You're on.
Thank you very much. I have a 2007 Camry Toyota. I bought it used, new to me. And I noticed ever since I purchased it in 2007, I get the oil changed regularly like I should, but it seems to go through a lot of oil. I've found that I have to add oil to it, at least 2 quarts in between every oil change. I recently got a recall notice for it, for excessive oil consumption, and I'm wondering if you've heard anything about that, if it's particular Toyotas, and if it's going to cost me an arm and a leg to fix the problem.
Sure. We've spoken about that on past shows. It's a very a good topic because many years ago, cars normally consumed oil. It was just common practice to check and top your oil up. Every filling station had a big rack of oil cans out there in different grades and prices. And at that time, there was guys right at the pumps that would check it and add for you. And engines got the technology improved, the machining, the tolerances, and oil consumption went way down. And it got to the point where nobody was checking their oil. And there weren't very many places that would check it for you anyway. And now, for better fuel efficiency and freer running engines, oil consumption is coming back. There's less tension on the piston rings. Oil viscosities are much thinner than they used to be. And so cars are starting to use oil. And most manufacturers are saying a quart to 1,000 miles, roughly, is commonplace.
Hmm.
Now, in the case of your car, Toyota has probably been having so much feedback, negative, of course, from owners that they're going to address it. And if it's a recall, it won't cost you anything. Service bulletins, the service actions are a different story. But so I would definitely investigate getting that done, because if it's going to calm down your oil consumption, that's a good thing. Because,
what would they do, though?
Well, I don't know what Toyota's got in mind, but I've experienced other recalls in where they're replacing piston and ring assemblies.
Mm-hmm.
Because
so would that be like taking out the whole engine?
Well, they're probably not going to. Is yours a V6 or a four-cylinder?
Four-cylinder.
It is, yeah. Most of those, they will do the repair with the engine in the vehicle. They're going to have to take a lot of stuff apart, but they will probably fix that with the engine, the basic engine still in the car. But, and I don't know what they're up to with their recall. I haven't been made aware of that one. But
okay, but
when you call the dealer, just, you know, ask those questions. And if it really is a recall, there's no charge to the owner of the vehicle.
Now, do you know if there would be anything where, like, I mean, my car vehicle does have a lot of mileage on it. I travel a lot with it. But, you know, I mean, I try to keep up with it as much as I can. My father did try to teach me, you know, top off your fluids and make sure your tires inflated and all that good stuff. So do you know of anything where a certain amount of mileage they usually, like average will say, well, if it's over this much mileage, or do I need to have an extra warranty on it or anything like that?
Definitely call Toyota. You know, either any Toyota dealer, or there might be an 800 number on that notice that you got. And ask those questions, because if there is a time limit, you don't want to exceed that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So I would make some calls pretty soon, just so you know where you stand with it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yep, well, thank you for the call. So if you get a recall notice,
yes,
it has to go to a factory authorized
yes
service.
And a recall, if it's a safety recall, National Highway Traffic Administration, that's because of safety.
Yeah.
And it is good for the life of the car, no matter who owns it, because it became a safety issue.
Is there a central location online where you can find
yep
that information?
Yeah, you can get on the website and you can search for recalls on your vehicle. It'll ask you your make, model, probably VIN number and stuff like that. Okay. But the easiest thing to do is call the manufacturer of your vehicle. They got all kinds of people there, customer service people ready to answer your questions.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Michael in Springfield, Mass. Michael, you're on.
How's it going today?
Good.
I have a 2011 Honda Pilot. And when I start it up, sometimes the air conditioning doesn't engage. And it just blows hot air. And I'll drive down the road, I'll turn it off, turn it on a few times. And then eventually it seems to engage, even though it's warm enough that it should start up right away.
Michael, does your car have automatic temperature control, or is it manual?
It is. It's automatic.
Yeah. That is in the realm of the computerized climate control, where a basic system, you physically push the buttons and ask it to come on a climate control vehicle. You're doing a request. You know, you're saying, okay, I'd like it to be, let's say, 68 degrees in the vehicle, and the system is relying on temperature sensors to confirm that. If the computer thinks it's 64 in there and you've asked for 68, it's not going to do anything. It's going to, if anything, it's going to warm you up. So I think that vehicle probably would need to go to a dealer or somebody that's got enough software to scan the heating and ventilation system on that vehicle.
Gotcha.
Unfortunately, there's no levers or things that you can do yourself on that. It's, you know, it's computerized.
Okay, I figured that might be the answer, but I was hoping it was something simple.
Oh, well.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Another unsatisfied customer, Gordon. You've done it again. 1-800-348-2551. Andy in Westfield. You're on, Andy.
Oh, yes. Hi. Let me get to a little quieter place here.
Okay. All right. We'll wait.
Just a second. Well, let me get you started. I have a 2005.
Oh, it's still pretty noisy, Andy.
Yeah, 2005 GMC Sierra pickup truck. I bought it a few months ago, and it's doing that thing when you drive on the road,
and it shuts off. And when it shuts off, the power steering goes out, the brakes go out, and, you know, you sort of cruise to the stop. And then it won't start back on for a while. And one time I had a tow to a repair facility, and they said when they towed the truck, it started there, so they couldn't diagnose it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other time it did that, and it started back up within maybe 5-6 minutes. So they couldn't diagnose it either. I had a crankshaft sensor, crankshaft position sensor replaced as the first theory of what was wrong with it, and that didn't solve the problem. Now, the truck has 175,000 miles, and so I'm wondering what's next thing to replace on my list. There are no lights that come on.
Sure.
No codes.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if that's...
That's as frustrating for the mechanic as it is for the owner, because I have towed many vehicles in and unloaded them, hopped in it, and it started, and it never failed again. That's very frustrating because we don't know what went wrong, and there's a good chance it'll happen again. In the case of your truck, given the age and mileage, I would be suspicious of the fuel pump, but I wouldn't just go replace it because it's very expensive. But I can give you a very quick, crude caveman test.
Oh, yeah, I like these.
Let's say this truck does it to you, and it quits, and you pull over to the side of the road, and it won't start. If you bring with you a rubber hammer, a big rubber hammer, kind of like a mallet, and go under the truck and hammer on the gas tank, and I'm serious, don't destroy the tank, but give it a couple of really good sharp blows on the bottom of the tank, and I have had this come true many times. It instantly starts because the fuel pump temporarily locked up.
Oh.
It's on its way out, and it reaches a point where it gets too hot and quits running.
So can I just kick it with my
You could. You certainly could. If you can give it a good blow from underneath the vehicle, you could smash your toe into it.
You don't want to use metal. You don't want to use a metal hammer, though. I think this could be a spark that could leave you in an explosive state.
Nah, I wouldn't worry about it. And he's got a plastic tank by now.
Oh,
in that
really?
Truck anyway.
Oh,
but that's what I would do. I would give the tank some grief when that happens. And what's really nice is if you have two people, because one guy can be in the vehicle cranking it, and then the other guy can kabang, give that gas tank a shot, and if it almost immediately starts, you've all but diagnosed a bad fuel pump.
Wow, amazing.
Try it.
Sounds great. The dealer had the pressure checked, the fuel pressure, and they said within the specs, so it's not necessarily ruling out that.
Well, that's because it was running at that time.
Okay.
It hadn't.
Right,
it wasn't in the failed mode.
Andy, thanks a lot for the call. So, basically, we're now at the stage where you just bang it with a hammer. So, what's that in the rate book?
See, now you were lamenting about all the computers and electronics.
Yeah,
now we're back to hitting stuff with hammers.
This is, you know what?
Does
this,
that make you happier?
This I understand, man. This I understand. Let's go to Connell and Troy. You're on.
Hi, I have a question about the lifespan of brakes. I have the 2007 Ford Focus. That's 129,000 miles. I've never had any work done on the brakes, never had anything replaced, and I'm beginning to worry that seems like a long time.
That's phenomenal, and you must not use your brakes much. And I'm not being funny, because some people, just by the way they drive, the routes they take, and how they have to travel, are wearing brakes out at, let's say, 32, 34, 35, 40,000 miles is not uncommon. But I have people who commute fairly long distances, and they can get 100,000 miles out of brakes if it's a long, easy commute. Because let's say you're on the thruway for 4 hours and you never touch the brakes. That's a lot of miles. So you must be on you must drive that way.
Well, I drive gently. I do most of my driving, except for one long trip a year. Most of my driving around Troy and Albany and sometimes Schenectady.
Have you had the brakes checked just out of your curiosity when it was in for any other routine service, just to see what kind of shape they're in?
Well, other than the regular inspection, no.
Yeah. At the mileage that you have on your car, there's some maintenances that would normally have been carried out. Spark plugs maybe by now, some filters and things like that.
Right. Valvoline has a checklist, and we follow that checklist religiously. I want to drive this car until it turns into dust.
Yeah. Are the brakes nice and smooth when you're applying them at higher speeds?
Yes, and yeah. There's no, it doesn't give way part way and then press further. They're nice and solid.
Wow, that's amazing, because they usually fall victim to rusting, the rotors.
That's what I was going to say. If you leave it outside, that lifespan goes way down. Yeah.
I think you ought to get them checked just to ease your mind, to make sure they're not, on their last, sheet of paper thickness,
We got to take a break here. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye now. Number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke here. We hit the home stretch in a moment.
Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, Harry, presenting The Artist Revealed, Artists' Portraits and Self-Portraits, with works by Milton Avery, Chuck Close, Leonard Baskin, Edward Steichen, Norman Rockwell, and more. ArkellMuseum.org. Manny's TV and Appliances, family-owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete. Available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores. Manny'sOliveOil.com. Kent Hicks Construction, West Chesterfield, Massachusetts, specializing in energy-efficient net-zero passive house home building, deep energy retrofits, and historical restorations. Serving Western Massachusetts, KentHicksConstruction.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, announcing their new website with more information about membership, grants, and loans. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Automotive maintenance and repair today with the genius Gordon Fricke and yours truly, not so genius Ray Graff here hosting the show. Let's go to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're up.
Hey, Ray. How you doing?
Hey, nice to have you on.
Gordon, yes. Just a little question there. You mentioned earlier, I didn't catch what it was. You mentioned some sort of product that Ray had recommended, and one or the other, you said it's not snake oil. It really works.
All right, well, here's the thing. Our legal department wants to make it quite clear. I was not recommending anything.
No. Gordon, I thought, recommended.
But we do. Well, he can't either. But
not by brand, but, I mean, what well, no, product?
The stuff we're talking about and is...
Viper oil.
No.
Oh, okay, no.
It's Tecron.
Yeah, it's the chemical. Chevron devised this stuff back in the, I'm thinking, 80s, because we used it. I worked at a Volkswagen, Porsche, Audi dealership, and all those cars were suffering from
the
gas wasn't ready for fuel injection yet. So Chevron came up with this thing, and they called it Tecron, and you can still buy it in the bottle that says that. And it's
injector cleaner?
Yeah, it's fantastic fuel system cleaner. Cleans your pistons, your valves, the whole deal.
Good. And, talking about, going back to caveman days, a friend of mine was an automotive mechanic graduate from a technical school, and when he first started out, he didn't have many tools, and one time I was helping him, wintertime, he was putting his engine back together in his car, and he didn't have enough wrenches around. He'd give me a bigger tire iron, he'd say.
Sure.
He had a different size tire iron, he might be able to fit the nut he had to turn.
That's what you got to do,
You got to do it.
Yeah, well,
especially when it's in the wintertime and you're underneath the car outside.
That's right.
All right.
Ah, good times.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Juan in Albany. Juan, you're on.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Hey, I have my wife driving a Kia Sedona, a minivan. At nighttime, especially when it gets really cold, like under 30 degrees, the alarm go off. And it's been happening for the last 3 years in the wintertime. I took it to a dealer quite a few times. Then I happened to find the problem, or they always told me it's fine. But it got so bad that even my neighbors, sometimes they call the cops because I don't hear the alarm and the car go off all night long. And we haven't been able to find out what the situation is.
Yeah, that could definitely be trouble in the middle of the night. of course, it's a 10 car. Is the bumper-to-bumper warranty already expired on things like the alarm system, do you know?
Funny you ask. It did. It went over. I took it over there probably last time. It was last year. They told me they couldn't see the car. Come back in a week. When I came back, I was 10 miles over.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, okay. This is what I would recommend. I would get out your owner's manual or go online and call Kia's customer assistance number. Call the manufacturer and have your VIN number available and any service records that you had at an authorized Kia dealer regarding that alarm system. And just talk to the people and say, you know, it only happens when it's this cold. And, of course, winter is now over, and the dealer made several attempts while it was under warranty. And I would ask them how they can help you out with it. You know, it's not a situation that the problem occurs constantly, but sure enough, it'll probably happen next winter, and then it'll be so far out of warranty that they won't even answer the phone. So I think that's what I would do.
That's awful. And I got to tell you, if I went to a dealer while the car was under warranty and they said, oh, no, we can't see you now, and then I came back and it was 10 miles later, I would raise absolute mayhem.
Yes.
To a corporate level.
Yes, and that's what you need to do. You need to ramp it up beyond the dealer if they're not interested in helping you, and or get something documented saying that I'm making attempts to bring it in, but my normal drive will take me past the warranty. You know, what do we do here? We know that, you know, the shop might not be able to get the car in this minute. But I would talk to corporate, see what they say. And if they say that they can't help you, I don't know what to do at that
point.
Don't
buy another one, that's for sure. All right, thanks, Juan. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
See ya. Let's go over to Peter in Kingston. Peter.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I have a 98 Volvo V70 wagon that the windows stopped working on. And I tried to replace the driver's side switch pack. And the door locks will still work, but the windows won't. I also took the fuse cover off and tried replacing the 20-amp circuit breaker relay, and that didn't work either. So I'm wondering, where do I go from here?
So, Peter, did all the windows stop working simultaneously?
No, they kind of stopped working like the back pair stopped and then the front pair stopped.
Okay, yep.
And I've got the passenger side is about 2 inches down.
Yeah. Mm. What I would check on that car, first of all, would be, you know where all the wires come from? They come out of the body and go into the door?
Correct.
You know, there's like a rubber boot there, it might look like a bellows or something.
Sure.
Open that up and see if there's some broken wires in there, because chances are the driver's door has been opened and shut about a trillion times, and it'll eventually, you know, you picture bending like a paperclip back and forth, you know, a bunch of times, it'll finally break, and that happens to those wires where they lead to the doors, and it's usually the driver's door because that's the door that gets the most opens and shuts.
Mm.
But you can also check the other doors as well. But that would be my starting point. You may have lost a power or ground connection because of that.
Okay.
And if you find it and fix it, you're going to be really happy because it's a pretty simple repair.
Cool.
Oh, absolutely. That's fantastic. Now, if that doesn't work or if those wires are intact, is there another thing that I should look for?
Not simple, because now you got to check current. You got to see where your power and grounds are. You know, if the switches are getting their signals, it gets way more complicated beyond that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was trying not to break out my voltmeter and whatnot and do all those continuity tests. So I'll pull that panel and check that. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thanks, Peter. We appreciate the call. Now here's another complaint from Uncle Ray about modern times. If we all had manual windows that you rolled up and down, or at least a manual override, this isn't an issue.
It definitely is less of an issue, because if you think about cars back when most cars had manual crank windows, you very seldom had problems with that mechanism.
Oh gosh, you know, here's a guy, it's 2 inches down, and he can't put it back up.
Yes.
This is the problem, Gordon.
And how many cars now can you get without power windows?
None.
Not many.
Yep, exactly. Let's go to Bob in beautiful Danbury, Connecticut. How's Danbury today, Bob?
Beautiful, beautiful. Good afternoon.
Hey.
I have a 2000 Astro van that I bought new. When I bought it, I knew I was going to do a towing for camping, a trailer. I have a 29-foot that weighs 4,500 pounds. And the problem I'm having, so I do a lot of towing. The problem I'm having is when I'm on an incline and I'm starting up, the rear right wheel seems to want to grab. It's an all-wheel drive car. I took it to a specialist. He says I wouldn't worry about it, but I'm concerned. I've had the transmission fluid changed about 30,000 miles ago, and so the rear end feels like it's dragging. When I make a right or a left turn, when I'm going straight ahead, no problem.
It's very possible that that Astro van has what's called a limited slip rear differential.
Yes, that's what the mechanic told me it had.
Yep, and in those, there are some clutches and some stuff going on in there that helps power both of the wheels if one starts to slip. And it requires a special, either a special lubricant or an additive that you squirt in there. Have you had the rear differential fluid changed in that vehicle?
Well, what I'm right now, I have an appointment next Thursday to take it to a local mechanic to change the fluid. He says he's getting the correct fluid.
Yep.
He's also doing since it's 30,000 miles, he's also maintaining my transmission, new fluid.
Yeah.
New filters.
Good idea. When make sure he changes the rear differential fluid and either uses fluid with a limited slip properties or puts the additive in it. And it may take one or two more times because your clutches are probably getting sticky. But that's probably the issue going on there.
Okay.
Okay, just a quick question. He said it might have self-enclosed bearings, and he won't know until he takes it off where the bearings are lubricated internally.
Well, he might take the cover off of the rear diff and look in there, which is a nice idea. And if everything looks good, then he refills it and makes sure he uses the fluid with the limited slip additive in it. And then you got to drive it for a while. Those clutches have to soak that friction modifier back in them. So you may not get results immediately. Could take some mileage and a bunch of turns.
How many miles?
Hard to say, but you have to make it turn. You have to go through curves for those clutches to work.
Yeah. All right, Bob, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye now. Over to Dave and Rhinebeck. Dave, you're up.
Hey, this is the first time I caught your show. I just wanted to call in and tell you how much I appreciate it. I'm in the car, but I pulled over.
Good.
I'm not driving.
Good.
I pulled over.
Good man.
And, just let you know, you can't replace Car Talk. Those guys were great, but I'm sitting here smiling and enjoying the show, and I really want you guys to laugh out loud. I know you're not supposed to do that. You're not funny, and if you laughed out loud, I'd be laughing out loud with you.
All right, man. Hey, thanks for the call, Dave. I appreciate it. And Gordon Fricke is a genius, so we're lucky to have him. Thanks a lot. Let's go over to Greg in Springfield, Mass. Greg, you're up.
Thanks a lot, guys. I have a 2005 Chevy Suburban.
Okay.
And I've noticed that I'll have to add coolant into the deck cool. I put it in the expansion tank, and it'll last me maybe about 3 weeks, a month, and then it starts. I see no leaks, but I have to add coolant.
Oh, God.
Well, you shouldn't have called today, Greg.
God, you're killing me. You're killing me, Greg.
Now, Ray's knows about adding coolant, and he's not having much fun adding it because when you add it too often, that's not good.
No, man. Yeah. No. I hope you're not looking at what I think I'm looking at.
And what's that?
Tell him, Gordon.
Well, the potential for the car Ray drives is a head gasket issue, and that's a really horrible bit of news on a North Star aluminum V8 General Motors engine.
Well, Suburban is a big engine.
Yeah, but it's not a North Star. What's happening with yours could just be you may have a tiny leak somewhere that's not getting on anything hot, or you're not noticing a smell, and you're probably not, you might not even be seeing any leaks under it because it could be evaporating or leaking so small amounts that you're not catching it. So there's a couple things to do. You could get it tested, get it pressure tested, and have the shop pump the cooling system up and watch it, see if anything's seeping out anywhere. And it could be as simple as a hose or a hose connection or a clamp, or it might need something. It could be the water pump. It's not uncommon on those by any stretch to have a water pump seeping. But if you're adding all the time, you should probably get it checked because that leak will probably get worse, and you don't want it worse at a bad time, you know?
Yeah. Now, real quick, I don't want to take more time. Somebody suggested some kind of tablets, maybe. I don't know how effective that is. I don't know what is that.
Yeah, General Motors, believe it or not, actually had, they call it, and they still do, cooling system tablets. Yeah. And you dropped them in the radiator and drove away, and it was there just to take care of the tiniest seeps. And that's not a harmful thing to do. But you don't want to overload it and get too many in there because then you get plugging things up.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, good luck. And let us know how it turns out because I'm still dealing with my own issues here, and we'll compare notes next time.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good day, guys.
Thanks a lot, Greg. Over to John in Ware, Mass. John, you're on.
Yeah. How you doing?
Good.
I got a 2007 Hyundai Santa Fe, and I got hit in the rear end pretty hard. They replaced the back door there, bumper, everything. Since I got the car back, I got a whining noise under the car. I don't think it's a Baron. Whether I put the thing in neutral, it still whines until I slow right down to nothing. And then when I speed up again, it whines again. The mechanic listened to it, and he slightly could hear it. And he said, well, if it gets louder, bring it back. It is starting to get louder. But I'm wondering what that could possibly be, if the engine got knocked backwards from the impact or something is making the CV joints out of line. What do you think?
Where are you hearing the noise, from the front or the back of the vehicle?
It sounds like it's almost in the middle of the vehicle, down below where my shifter is. But down in that area, it's very hard to tell if it's towards the back or front. But if I lean my head down towards the shifter, it seems like it's coming from there. It's a whining noise.
And the speed, the whine increases and decreases with the speed of the vehicle?
Yes. Yeah, as I speed up, it gets a little bit louder and then higher pitch, and then a lower pitch as I let go. All the way down to where I'm about 20 miles an hour, it kind of disappears.
How many miles are on it?
Oh, I got about 135,000.
And is yours four-wheel drive?
All-wheel drive.
Yeah. I would be.
It hasn't done this until after the accident.
Okay.
Did you get hit hard enough to push any of the wheels around, the suspension?
I got hit hard enough, but nothing hit the suspension.
Yeah.
The spare tire underneath was driven forward.
Yep.
They replaced the whole bumper assembly, the cap, the door, you know, what do you call that thing there, the lid. But I can't see anything out of line. They put it up on lift. They couldn't really see anything.
Yeah. Here's what
I don't know how much it would. Yeah.
Yeah. What I'd be suspicious of, John, is the drive shaft goes from the transmission to the rear differential.
Yeah.
And I'd be concerned with what's called the center bearing, which is right in the middle of the car practically. And that center bearing, the minute the car rolls, it's starting to turn.
That's a pretty important piece.
Yeah. And that sound would increase and decrease with your speed. So I'd be concerned with the drive shaft and the center bearing of the drive shaft.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
All right, John, okay, we're almost done here, but you got 10 more seconds.
Okay, no, I just want to thank you very much. This is the first time I ever got on to talk to somebody about my car. I tried car talk many times, never got on.
Hey, man.
But I appreciate that. I'm going to have them look at that.
Great.
Thanks a lot. You know, it's funny. I get a whining noise in my car from time to time. Turns out it's the kids.
Well, I was going to ask you if it was a human
generator
or a car.
It can be very annoying, actually.
I didn't want to say wife. I just want to say human. I
said the kids.
Yeah, I know you did. I noticed that.
They can't fight back
too much yet.
Gordon Fricke, well done, old boy. A lot of calls. Sorry if we left you on the line, Peter and Clinton and Carol and South Hadley and Mike and Red Hook. Apologies. We can only take so many calls. Support comes from Fulton County Tourism in the Southern Adirondack Park. Camping, hiking, biking, boating, fishing. On their 44 Lakes events and performances, 44 Lakes, 44 Choices, 44lakes.com. Stagecoach Tavern, Route 41, Sheffield, Massachusetts, serving local seasonal fare Thursday through Sunday in an historic Stagecoach Inn. stagecoachtavern.net. And Ashokan Center, a classroom in the wild offering environmental, outdoor education, and living history programs for schools, ashokancenter.org. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to the great Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks to Zach V8 Malloy at the controls. Thanks to Deb Malik, who had her debut here as the call screener, helped by Joe Makowitz. And once again, hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for being here. Tomorrow, believe it or not, it's Friday. That means it's Food Friday. And according to my producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, I've got a very special treat. Don't know what it is. We'll find out. News is next.